everyone, and welcome to the wonderful, magical, make you feel good all over, chatting tonight, the tonic you didn't know you needed. Speaking of tonic, tonight's episode is brought to you by Traditional Medicinals Organic Throat Coat Tea with lemon and echinacea, because some dildo decided to smoke a shit ton yesterday. Yes, I smoke. And normally I can have a pack last like 2 to 3 days, easy. But I decided to smoke more than normal, and I'm paying the price. Is Traditional Medicinals paying me for this? Absolutely not. Probably because I said the word dildo, but whatever. Listen, we all have to have a vice. Okay? And I'm not saying dildos are my vice. I'm saying smoking is my vice. And if you don't have a vice, I highly recommend that you go pick up one immediately. Tonight is all about the subtle art of verbal evisceration. Let's delve into the world of insults. The who, what, when, where, and why of it all. Along with some of the best insults from history, literature, movies, and more. Oh, fine. Maybe we won't cover all of that, but I certainly will try and hit the bullet points because I have a cornucopia of notes. Yes, an actual wicker cornucopia, and I have fashioned these notes into the shape of various fruits because it's all about the visuals with you people, isn't it? So stick around for all that and more. Hey, what do you want to do tonight? If you like, we could always chat all night. Let's chat about whatever we want to chat about. It's all right here. It's all right here. I'm chatting tonight. I know I said it's all about verbal evisceration. All. But I want you guys to know that it's really gossipy. Twitter gossipy specifically. And I have this surprise for you all at the end. You know how I love surprises. Just call me the Duchess of Surprises. And it would tie in nicely to my feelings of Twitter gossip, but I don't know if I will. Maybe. Okay, possibly. I don't know. We shall see. Anyway, let's get into the art of insulting. Insulting someone is one of the most common social behaviors, either consciously or subconsciously. Various reasons for insulting are to express negative emotions, assert dominance, and establish a social hierarchy. And, of course, my two favorite reasons are the last two. Why? Because we no longer live in a world where we can challenge someone to a duel. As Freud so astutely remarked, the man who first flung a word of abuse at his enemy instead of a spear was the founder of civilization. And once you acquire the skill of the insult, and it is a skill, one you must hone, you too become a defender of civilization. One added benefit for taking the time to hone your verbal sparring skills is not only are you providing yourself with a sort of mental calisthenic, if you will, once a fatal blow is delivered, you achieve some sort of cerebral orgasm at the end. That's so good. And because we live in a verbal society, physical aggression is less often used to settle issues of status. Therefore, an insult can be interpreted as an attempt to reduce the social status of the recipient and raise the social status of the insulter. We live in a period of extreme concern about how we are perceived by others. Social psychologists see a rising trend in narcissism in college students. I posit further that it is across the board. This trend is accentuated by social media, where those are subject to unrelenting evaluation by other members of their social network. Concern with how one is perceived creates social insecurity. The purpose of the insult is to reduce someone else in an imaginary social hierarchy, so it's hardly surprising that insults will refer to a person's social status in terms of ancestry, lack of prestige, or membership in a despised outgroup, like Nazis, for example. Otherwise, the content of insults across the ages is monotonously predictable. Many insults feature a sexual component, a reference to sexual organs, or bringing up shameful or ineffectual sexual behavior. In addition to status and sexuality, insults inflict shame by mentioning unappealing traits, fatness, shortness, baldness, etc. And while these barbs are easy to lob, we should all strive better than a simple ad hominem attack. Another way of taking a person down is by questioning their intelligence or general mental competence. For insult purposes, recipients are invariably stupid or crazy. While I am all for questioning one's intelligence, mental veracity, and attachment to reality, it's imperative to know words that are more impactful than stupid or crazy. The hierarchy logic of insults means that if the recipient is shamed, the insulter rises in status relative to the victim. Not all insults are equal, of course. Some miss the mark and have no impact upon relative status. We'll refer back to that a little later. In order to maintain an effective community, aggression must be kept to a minimum, hence the elaborate traditions of politeness and respect found in real-world communities of the past. People behave that way to avoid unnecessary anger, disputes, and violence. Again, this is where we, the valiant defenders of civilization, are an absolute necessity. Shaming should be in your repertoire. Pardon the additional acoustics if you can hear them. There's quite the storm happening behind me, so it's not me adding in fake thunderstorms as I have done before. This one, darlings, is real. Now, luckily for us, we have researchers that explore the intricacies of verbal devastation, and their work offers an intriguing perspective on the ways in which we disparage one another and the values derogatory terms reinforce. One of the most interesting lines of research investigates the basic forms that verbal abuse takes. Do insults share a few common themes, and what might they be? Researchers showed words conveying negative evaluations exemplify four themes. These themes are worthlessness, stupidity, depravity, and peculiarity. Words conveying worthlessness, such as piddling, pointless, or incapable, signify that a person lacks all value or merit. Those conveying stupidity, brainless, dumb, or moronic, communicate a lack of intellect. Those conveying depravity, beastly, disgraceful, or deplorable, indicate immorality. Peculiarity terms, odd, bizarre, warped, signal violations of social convention. These primary dimensions of negative evaluation conceal deeply held values. We use them when we judge others to have transgressed four kinds of standard. We value power, intelligence, morality, and normality. And when people violate these values, we show our disapproval with corresponding abusive expressions. The language of insult varies around the globe. Indeed, some fascinating work compares insults across cultures, and one such study examined insulting expressions from 11 distinct language communities. The researchers sampled almost 3,000 people, asking each how they might respond if someone rudely and unapologetically bumped into them. About 12,000 pungent expressions were generated. Their content varied revealingly between different national groups. Germans, Americans, and Italians were especially drawn to anal terms of abuse, such as variations of asshole, whereas Spaniards preferred to query the offender's intelligence. British and Dutch participants leaned towards genital terminology, and Norwegians specialized in satanic expressions. Animal terms and sexual inadequacies and abnormalities were also common. One finding of this study was that the abusive terms implicating the offender's family members were only common in some Mediterranean cultures. This kind of verbal abuse was the focus of one study in the psychology of insults. The authors of the study used insults as a window into cultural differences and the understandings of personhood. In collectivist cultures, they reasoned, people see themselves as intrinsically embedded in a web of family relationships. Insults will therefore tear at the web rather than targeting the person in isolation. In individualist cultures, where people see themselves as autonomous and separate, insults are more likely to disparage the singular person. The researchers collected an anthology of insults from participants in several cities in Italy, where the North tends to be less collectivist than the South. They classified insults as individualistic or relational. The former disparage the person's intellect, physical features, manners, or sexuality. The latter target family members, taboo family relationships, or stigmatized group identities. Sure enough, the Southern Italians were more likely to make relational insults than the Northerners. For example, fuck off you and 36 of your relatives. Individualistic Northerners, in turn, were especially prone to deride an individual's intelligence while sparing their relations. How we disparage others reveals who we are and what we value. Insults can also have a powerful psychological impact on both the sender and receiver. When someone insults another person, it activates the amygdala, which is responsible for triggering the stress response. This can lead to the release of the stress hormone cortisol, which can cause feelings of anxiety, fear, and anger. Repeated exposure to insults can also lead to the negative thought patterns such as low self-esteem and self-doubt. There are several factors that affect the impact of insults. Context. The context in which the insult is delivered can affect its impact. For an example, an insult delivered in private can have a different effect than one delivered in public. Relationship. The relationship between the sender and the receiver can also affect the impact of the insult. And culture. Cultural differences also affect the impact of insults. Some cultures are more accepting of insults, while others may see them as highly offensive. So why do some insults hurt more than others? First, they remind people how short of our ego ideal we fall. Insults are most painful when they attack the ego ideal. The ego ideal is basically a perfected version of ourselves, and it is inherently impossible to live up to. Targeted results get strong emotional reactions. Second, they cause a drop in status. Studies show that some insults can cause a person to feel strong negative emotions in addition to a sharp increase in stress hormones. These emotions and hormones combine to tell our body that our status has dropped. In situations where insults are more frequent, those poor, stupid bastards, the brain will even begin rewiring major life narratives to fit and explain the current experience of increased negative emotions and stress hormones. Third, they confirm a deep belief. Insults are more powerful when they confirm a specific belief the person already has about themselves. This plays on the brain's confirmation bias. In other words, an insult is more effective if the person already thinks you are right. And the best part of this, a person doesn't actually have to have the flaw for the insult to work. They just need to think they have the flaw. We can see this clearly in people with psychological issues where people believe their reality is one way when it is actually another. This is why some insults should hurt but don't, and vice versa. A person's belief about how they live up to their own perfect ego ideal is all that matters. And last but not least, they hijack the brain's desire to process and analyze, making the insult burrow deep. A powerful insult hijacks the brain's problem-solving system by being indirect. When someone uses a simple insult, it is obvious you are being attacked. But when an indirect insult is used, the brain isn't so sure, since the comment at first appears neutral or even friendly, and so the brain has lowered its defenses. It then takes the time to process the insult over and over again. And as your brain analyzes the content, the message burrows into the brain from repetition. Thus, the indirectness makes it difficult to respond quickly because your brain hasn't decided if it's being threatened, and it burrows the message deep into your processing system. Another way for insults to be direct is for them to attack objects, identities, and other things associated with the ego ideal. For example, a person could comment on how your car is actually last year's model, how it is sad that you weren't the first person invited to the big party, how your friend is awkward, or how your job position is worthless. These attacks appear to be simply critical and factual comments, but they can also be disguised insults. Since comments like these that are not clearly direct attacks, they can leave people up at night, mulling it over and over again to try and reason out your intention. You can hear clearly now, the rain has gone. Okay, sorry, I just said that because in fact the rain has stopped. Hallelujah. Now, to continue on just a bit about why some insults are more impactful than others, let's read a bit from the study From Adorable to Worthless, Implicit in Self-Report Structure of Highly Evaluative Personality Descriptors. So-called highly evaluative personality judgments, e.g. describing someone as exceptional, odd, or vile, are an integral component of people's daily judgments of themselves and others. However, little is known about the conceptual structure, psychological function, and personality relevance of these types of attribution. Two studies were conducted to explore the internal, i.e. implicit, and external self-report structure of highly evaluative terms. Further analyses of somatic similarity sorting and self-reports on several representative samples of a highly evaluative personality adjectives yielded internal and external structures that were very similar. Both types of structure included five dimensions representing distinction, worthlessness, depravity, unconventionality, and stupidity. The robustness of the uncovered dimensions across two studies suggests that typically excluded highly evaluated personality terms, far from being behaviorally ambiguous and psychologically uninformative, allude to meaningful dispositions that people both implicitly understand and possess to different degrees. These findings also suggest that highly evaluative personality judgments are organized around the basic domains of morality, i.e. depravity, power, distinction and worthlessness, peculiarity, unconventionality, and intelligence, stupidity. In this study, they discuss the implication of their findings for the study of self and other esteem processes, personality perception, and the Big Seven factor model of personality. Social cognitive research, for instance, shows that highly evaluative personality descriptions, e.g. describing someone as excellent, immoral, strange, or conventional, play a unique role in person perception processes. Specifically, highly evaluative personality judgments facilitate future person inferences by eliciting effect-based expectations about the kinds of trait and behavior that characterize a person. The unique social function played by evaluative person judgments is also supported by developmental linguistics research showing that even young children rely on largely evaluative versus descriptive statements when talking about themselves and others. Furthermore, evidence from cognitive psychology indicates that evaluative judgments frequently dominate over narration and description in informed communication. The role of evaluation in person descriptions has also been acknowledged explicitly by some personality psychologists. For instance, recent work on the sociocognitive function of trait usage suggests that personality terms that are clearly desirable or undesirable are more numerous than terms that are neutral in evaluation. This is a reasonable finding if the prime purpose of trait terms is to inform about the aptitude of persons. Similarly, taking a socio-evolutionary perspective, Hogan asserts that the main purpose of personality descriptions is to evaluate the potential of persons as resources for the group. Evaluation is also seen as a core element in important personality processes such as self-esteem and self-concept, self-perceptual biases, and even personality disorders. The view that highly effective self and other judgments are an intrinsic element of personal perception has not permeated the personality taxonomy literature, where popular structural models like the Big Five define the personality domain primarily in terms of descriptive traits. Historically, this emphasis on descriptive meaning over evaluation when mapping the personality domain can be traced to traditional definitions of personality that dismiss moral judgments and reputations as not relevant to the scientific study of personality. The exclusionary argument held by these definitions is at odds with previously introduced contemporary sociocognitive and evolutionary perspectives, which see evaluative judgments as particularly informative regarding disposition and behaviors of highly affective relevance to humans. That is, evaluative judgments are informative about social characteristics that are relevant to group survival. The historical disregard for highly evaluative personality terms is also challenged by recent lexical personality work. This literature indicates that the traditional lexical personality space can be expanded with two additional dimensions, tapping different aspects of evaluation, a model known as the Big Seven factor structure. I'm not going to bore you with the whole study because it's approximately 41 pages. With references and acknowledgments. But the conclusion is, the two studies reported in this paper have shown that typically excluded English highly evaluative personality descriptors, far from being behaviorally ambiguous and psychologically uninformative, allude to meaningful dispositions that people implicitly understand and possess to different degrees. The dispositions identified in our studies, distinction and worthlessness, which are two facets of positive valence, depravity, unconventionality, and to a lesser extent stupidity, are informative regarding the conceptual scope of the Big Seven factor model. These dimensions may underscore meaningful personality variance that has been overlooked in traditional personality models. This claim, however, needs to be tested by future studies, where the statistical independence overlap between our dimensions and traditional personality dispositions, such as those represented in the Big Five, is examined. Similarly, future research should examine the value of distinction, worthlessness, depravity, and unconventionality to predict important self-esteem, related outcomes, and the association between these dimensions and self-perception biases, and multidimensional measures of self-esteem. In conclusion, this study believes that our findings attest to the idea that evaluative judgments, even extreme ones, are an integral component of the human personality description. For those unfamiliar with the Big Five and the Big Seven personality traits, because, I mean, let's be honest, it's not like people talk about this shit all the time. Or maybe they do and I'm just not invited into that group. It's possible. The Big Five are extroversion, agreeableness, openness, conscientiousness, and neuroticism. And the Big Seven encompass positive emotionality, negative emotionality, dependability, agreeability, conventionality, a positive valence, and negative valence. It's a paradigm for describing human personality. It helps to think of yourself as guiding the individual that the insult is directed towards, a better self-regulation, that you're helping them with their dissocial behavior. Again, you're a defender of civilization. Now, why did I bring up this study to you? Because when you are honing your verbal sparring skills, I expect you to factor in the four reasonings that make insults hurt more than
others.
Insults can and do take various forms, and it is essential to understand the different types in order to recognize which and with what combination to employ in order to respond appropriately towards the uncivilized miscreant you've had the misfortune to encounter, and vice versa. Let's start with what they are not. Constructive criticism versus insults. Constructive criticism is not an insult and should not be confused with insults. Constructive criticism is feedback aimed at helping someone improve and grow, while insults aim to hurt and demean. If the person improves and grows, all the better. On to backhanded compliments. Backhanded compliments are disguised insults that appear to be compliments. These insults are often used to undermine someone's confidence subtly. For example, you look great today for someone your age. Nonverbal insults. Nonverbal insults involve using body language, tone, and other nonverbal cues to convey a negative message. Examples of nonverbal insults include eye rolling, smirking, and ignoring someone. And on to verbal insults. Verbal insults are the most common form of insults. They involve the use of words to belittle, mock, or attack someone personally. Examples of verbal insults include name-calling, teasing, and sarcasm. Now, it is imperative to familiarize yourself with all of the variations of insults, paying particular attention to the verbal insult subsection with all of its complexities. One particular skill to practice is repartee. Repartee is the art of the comeback, or the skillful use of a witty reply. It is a highly developed skill calling for fast and analytical thinking. It is by far the height of civility and is usually the most devastating. The perfect combination. It is a quick, sharp reply, like the slice of a scalpel. You don't know your cut till you see the blood. Coming from the French word repartee, of the same meaning, and repartee comes from the French verb repartir, meaning to retort. Most of us can think of a clever reply long after the moment has passed, typically in the shower or at 2 a.m., but repartee calls for the ability to speak precisely at the psychological moment. At its most innocent, the repartee is just a clever remark. At its harshest, it could be the rapier sharp put down to someone making a hostile remark. This requires attention and alertness, and it seems to be a dying art. And some of the best examples are drawn from legendary characters like Winston Churchill, Groucho Marx, Dorothy Parker, and Robert Benchley, on and on. And this gives us a lovely segue to some fantastic historical eviscerations. That's right, folks, we're traveling back in time before we slam face first into the present. To quote Dorothy Parker's epitaph, "Excuse my dust." After an after-dinner recital, an acclaimed and heavily respected opera singer was invited to the White House, but apparently performing for President Calvin Coolidge was quite a frightening experience, and her performance left much to be desired. During the performance, one of the White House guests leaned over and whispered to Coolidge, "What do you think of the singer's execution?" Coolidge calmly replied, "I'm all for it." After gaining fame for a campaign to promote colonial India's independence, Mahatma Gandhi traveled to London and met with British authorities. The British were wonderfully curious about this strange little man, not my words, and Gandhi was constantly bombarded with questions from the press and photographers. One day, a reporter cried out, "What do you think of Western civilization?" And in a monumental moment that would define Gandhi's reputation, he replied, "I think it would be a good idea." Muhammad Ali once took a flight on Eastern Airlines in the 70s. A flight attendant was making her final checks on the passengers, but noticed Ali failed to fasten his seatbelt. She kindly asked him to do so, but Ali replied, "Superman don't need no seatbelt." Not intimidated by the boxer's reputation and fame, the flight attendant replied, "Superman don't need no airplane either." Oscar Wilde was widely known for his wit and intelligence in plays, but was no stranger to it in real life. After one performance of one of his plays, Wilde went on stage and welcomed a warm reception, and many people applauded and threw copious amounts of beautiful flora, but one unsatisfied person threw a rotten cabbage at the playwright. Wilde picked it up and replied with a straight face, "Thank you, my friend. Every time I smell it, I shall be reminded of you." In his early career, Churchill was at a meeting and another member was giving a long-winded speech. Churchill began to close his eyes and fall asleep. At the sight of this, the member became visibly angry and shouted, "Mr. Churchill, must you fall asleep while I'm speaking?" Instead of making attempts of an apology or a cover-up, Churchill simply replied, "No, it's purely voluntary." After receiving the Nobel Prize in 1922, the Danish physicist Niels Bohr invited friends and associates to a celebration party at his country cottage north of Copenhagen. The event was also well attended by members of the press. One reporter, noticing a horseshoe hanging on a wall, teasingly asked the famous physicist, "Can it be that you, of all people, believe a horseshoe will bring you good luck?" Bohr replied, "Of course not. But I understand it brings you luck whether you believe it or not." A woman's husband, angry at his wife's display of interest in another man, staggered over to Truman Capote's table and assumed an intimidating position directly in front of the diminutive writer. He then proceeded to unzip his pants and, in Capote's own words, hauled out his equipment. As he did this, he bellowed in a drunken slur, "Since you're autographing things, why don't you autograph this?" It was a tense moment, and a hush fell over the room. The silence was a blessing, for it allowed all those within earshot to hear Capote's soft, high-pitched voice deliver the perfect, emasculating reply. "I don't know if I can autograph it, but perhaps I can initial it." While posing for publicity photographs for the film, actress Mary Anderson approached the director and said, "What is my best side, Mr. Hitchcock?" His reply was soon being circulated all around Hollywood. "My dear, you're sitting on it." Robert Benchley offhandedly said to the uniformed man standing by the front door, "My good man, would you get me a taxi?" The man immediately took offense and replied indignantly, "I'm not a doorman. I happen to be a rear admiral in the United States Navy." Benchley instantly quipped, "All right then, get me a battleship." Dorothy Parker and a friend were talking about the forceful and garrulous celebrity. "She's so outspoken," remarked the friend. "By whom?" asked Dorothy. "John Bright once said he's a self-made man and worships his creator." Clarence Darrow said, "I have never killed a man, but I have read many obituaries with great pleasure." From Stephen Bishop, "I feel so miserable without you. It's almost like having you here." Samuel Johnson, "He is not only dull himself, he is the cause of dullness in others." Andrew Lang wrote, "He uses statistics as a drunken man uses lampposts for support rather than illumination." Billy Wilder's clipped, "He has Van Gogh's ear for music." Winston Churchill also lobbed, "He has all the virtues I dislike and none of the vices I admire." And Catherine the Great once said, "If you won't be a good example, then you'll have to be a horrible warning." And on to some of the best from literature. From As You Like It, by Shakespeare, of course, and I've used this one before. "I desire we be better strangers." Vonnegut from Timequake wrote, "If your brains were dynamite, there wouldn't be enough to blow your hat off." From The Importance of Being Earnest and Oscar Wilde, "I never saw anyone take so long to dress with such little result." And I think we can think of a duchess that encompasses that. From Dostoevsky in Crime and Punishment, "He delivers a fatal blow." And if this doesn't remind you of some of the ideological warriors, he was one of the numerous and varied legion of dullards, of half-animated abortions, conceited, half-educated coxcombs who attach themselves to the idea most in fashion, only to vulgarize it, and who caricature every cause they serve, however sincerely. And that was published in 1866. Camus wrote in Happy Death, "I feel like getting married, or committing suicide, or subscribing to L'Illustration." Something desperate, you know? Tolstoy from Anna Karenina. He liked this makes me laugh so much. Sorry. And I'm only laughing because I love this sport so much. Anyway. He liked fishing and seemed to take pride in being able to like such a stupid occupation. Ayn Rand, The Fountainhead. "Don't fool yourself, my dear. You're much worse than a bitch. You're a saint, which shows why saints are dangerous and undesirable." The writer and critic Walter Keir said he had delusions of adequacy. And our dear Oscar Wilde makes the list again with, "He has no enemies, but is intensely disliked by his friends." Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby and have ourselves some movie quotes. You know, lead-ins aren't that easy to do, okay? They're not. I'd like to see you try it. Wow! You know I'm kidding, right? You know I'm smiling when I say that, right? Our first movie quote comes from Anchorman. "Hey, where'd you get those clothes?" "The toilet store." From Blade Trinity. "You cock-juggling thunder cunt." And in the only reason I added that is because I actually love the word thunder cunt. It reminds me of those old ships where there was like a carved relief of a woman on the front of it. From The Breakfast Club, and this is a classic. "Does Barry Manilow know that you raid his wardrobe?" From Bull Durham. "From what I hear, you couldn't hit water if you fell out of a fucking boat." From Duck Soup. "He may look like an idiot and talk like an idiot, but don't let that fool you. He really is an idiot." Aaron Brockovich. "That's all you got, lady? Two wrong feet and fucking ugly shoes." Gangs of New York. "I don't give a tuppenny fuck about your moral conundrum, you meat-headed shitsack." And keep in mind, you don't have to quote these. You can always paraphrase. I mean, maybe you just want to use the word shitsack. "Use these insults at your leisure." From Point Break. "You are a real blue flame special, aren't you, son? Young, dumb, and full of cum. What I don't know is how you got assigned here. Guess we must have ourselves an asshole shortage, huh?" Now see, I personally wouldn't use the majority of that, but I love the "guess we have an asshole shortage here." That part's perfection. From the movie The Women. "You want to see a bad facelift? Helen Danvers, 2 o'clock. She looks like she's re-entering the Earth's atmosphere." And from Billy Madison, to finish it out, a classic insult and a classic gif. "What you've said is some of the most insanely idiotic things I've ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in the room is now dumber for having listened to that. May God have mercy on your soul." And we finally make it to some of the best insults collected from the internet. I'm not insulting you, I'm describing you. I'd agree with you, but then we'd both be wrong. "I'm glad to see you haven't let your education get in the way of your intelligence." "I get so emotional when you're not around." "The emotion is happiness." "You've only got 2 brain cells and they're both fighting for 3rd place." Isn't it dangerous to use your whole vocabulary in one sentence? And kind of recommend that I was involved in Megs that use that maybe towards the Sussex squad on occasion. "I thought of you today. It reminded me to take out the trash." "Anyone who ever loved you was wrong. You're impossible to underestimate." "You sound like a pizza cutter, all edge and no point." "Oh, a thought crossed your mind? That must have been a lonely journey." "You're my favorite person, besides every other person I've met." You have more dick in your personality than you do in your pants. You look like your father would be disappointed in you if he stayed. If you were any dumber, someone would have to water you once a week. You're as useless as the U, E, U, E, and Q. I was gonna give you a nasty look, but I see you already have one. Stupidity is not a crime. You are free to go. Of course, there are multitudes and multitudes more, and as always, I will include a bunch of links in case y'all wanna check them out. Now on to the surprise, okay? I asked Grok to roast me, and that motherfucker burned me to a fucking crisp. All right, here we go. Well, 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 at Betty Davis Thighs, or should I call you the Twitter trash talker? It seems like you've been spending your days on the internet stirring up drama and picking fights with anyone who dares to have a different opinion. I mean, seriously, how insecure do you have to be to go around publicly executing people who like someone you don't? Talk about a desperate cry for attention. But hey, at least you're consistent in your hypocrisy. You call out others for being fake and attention-seeking, yet here you are, posting your own drama for the world to see. Pot, meat, kettle. And let's not forget your brilliant idea to dox people you don't like. That's a surefire way to make friends and influence people, right? I'm sure your mother is so proud of the little keyboard warrior she raised. But hey, keep up the good work, Betty Davis Thighs. Your daily dose of internet toxicity is really making the world a better place. Just remember, one day you'll look back at all this and realize you are nothing more than a sad, lonely troll desperate for any form of human connection. Until then, keep on roasting, you adorable little dumpster fire. I mean, Jesus Christ. But like a phoenix from the ashes, I rise. And please just let me say this. I have never doxed anyone in my life. And this brings me to the Twitter gossip. Okay, come closer, little kittens, because we're gonna talk Twitter. As many of you know, I was on Twitter when it was in its infancy, when it was still Twitter before X. And let's be honest, it will always be Twitter. When it was Ashton Kutcher, Rob Thomas, a handful of other celebrities, and us, a few randos, screaming in 140 characters into the void, okay? Floating around internet space like astronauts, looking for some other lunatic astronaut to tether ourselves to so we wouldn't just be screaming into the void alone. And why all the buildup, you may ask? I'm trying to establish tone, set the scene, so to speak, and establish credibility.
I've been around a long time, bitch. I'm old, okay? I'm no young person. I have a lot of friends. I have credibility.
And this is directed mostly to my mutuals, but maybe there's some message here that anyone can benefit from. And before I really get into it, please know that this gossip is coming from a place of caring. I care. I'm not being just some catty bitch doing it to start shit. I don't like to start shit. I like to shut shit down. I actually care that some people have gotten sucked in by various fake accounts, and I don't mean fake like parody. I mean fake like they're women pretending to be men, and not even pretending that well. And it pains me to see people so invested in people that are obviously taking advantage of the spirit and support of the community. And I do vacillate between thinking these poor women must just be lonely and maybe needing company to, you know what, fuck them. What if they're just sick fucks that derive great pleasure in duping others? And that I can't abide, because I really like some, all of you, and I don't like you falling for this bullshit. And would I call them out on Twitter? Yes, and I have before. But I've seen how some, in your misguided loyalty, nastily defend them against any pushback of their validity. Not to me. Well, to me, but I don't really fucking care. I've been called worse by better, but some others haven't fared so well and have been wounded by the nastiness. Maybe you just don't care that they're fake, which is weird because you continue to act like they're men, so maybe I shouldn't even say anything, but I'm going to anyway. Now, those of you who have stuck with me from the beginning know that my first real call out, the hashtag truth will out call out, was done with due diligence and an attention to detail so that I wouldn't be wrong, and I wasn't. No matter how much the eternally young, eternally victimized person would like to deny, and I'm not wrong about the people that I'm speaking about. And of course, after you hear my, let's say, circumstantial evidence, because I definitely did not do full-on dossiers like I did the other one, I believe that in a court of law, there is enough circumstantial evidence that it would sway a jury in my favor. If it pleases the court, I now present my circumstantial evidence in the form of screenshots. And I loathe screenshots, that I have taken these screenshots. I can't, because I prefer my phone's storage to be clogged up with the dumbest photos in the world, basically like memes, stupid shit for the podcast, pics of my garden, pets, vintage things that I come across that I find interesting or whatever. Okay, not this shit, but I'll delete it as soon as I'm done with this. So, and I'm not going to mention any names because I think y'all can figure it out on your own. But I am going to say that what they're doing is they're passing off other people's pictures and words as if they're their own. And it's subtle, you know, it's subtle, but it's not innocent. And that's the problem. It's not innocent. It's intentional. And that's what pisses me off. So our first gentleman used a picture from Peter Whittle of Covenant Gardens and passed it off as their own. Then they used a picture of a gentleman holding a flag with the hashtag Commonwealth Day earth emoji, hug emoji, heart emoji, peace sign emoji. Then in a tweet about family, they used a picture from What to Expect with an article musical play for babies and toddlers, and they use that picture as if they were describing their family. So, do you see what I'm saying? Like, it's not. Here's what I mean. My handle is Betty Davis Thighs, and I will use pictures of and GIFs of Betty Davis, but am I trying to make you think that I'm Betty Davis? Do you think that I'm Betty Davis? Absolutely fucking not. And that's the difference. Let's continue. I was there in central London, and the Not My King Hatefuls was tiny compared to the huge amount of people who came out in the rain to support the king. As King Charles III was crowned, I stood with people of all ages, race, religions, and we all said, God save the king. And they used two pictures from the telly. I'm stymied. Here's a reply from one of our mutuals regarding the blatant theft of a tweet. Oh, blank. I never mind anyone taking my screenshots, etc., but lifting my edited bit of text word for word and passing it off as your own is a little sad. No? And what did they do? They deleted the tweet. That's right. I want you to ask yourself this. What straight man, and really, what gay man, even, is going to say, Sussex Squad is a small, coordinated group, mainly of Black Americans, ignorant to British history, culture, and progress. Never tweet fun or interesting things about H&M like royal watchers do. It's all lies, misinformation, bitter bullies who hate they're not a part of the royal fun, with a gif of a group of cartoon Disney princesses that say, you're not invited. Just ask yourself that. Also, yes, we want to see William in a kilt.
Oh.
Okay. On to our next culprit.
Where do I begin?
Where do I begin with this one? How about them using a photo from Easy Laundromat off of Facebook that was captioned, "Nana sandwich for supper. Almost anything and everything goes between two slices of bread," right? That was the original post. And this person then takes the image and says, "The image of these abominations in a school lunchbox after sitting in a bag or locker for several hours triggers me." They then used a picture from Instagram from the account Gracious Opulence and wrote, "Fridays can be a struggle. Post a random fact about yourself. I'll go first. In 1980, I was an all-round state champion in gymnastics for my age group." Go. This is a man, by the way, just so you know. It's a married man. Right. Okay. Continuing on. "I have just had a health scare and decided I need to see a medical professional. Today I came home from the doctor's office and showed my wife the prescription for daily sex. Turns out I have dyslexia. Take my wife, please. It's called cabbageware, and I adore it. Very difficult to hide from the lady." Ask yourself this. A straight married man collects cabbageware and then needs to hide it from his wife.
Okay.
And God only knows where this picture was lifted from, because it's definitely not his cabinet. We've also seen it with some blue and white ironware. 100% lifted off of another post from Instagram pretending to be their own. How do I know this? Well, because did it. The picture when they were talking about their lovely wife coming home from a hair appointment. "I was once again struck by the ethereal beauty of her cascading tresses. Her locks, like spun golden treacle, cascaded down her shoulders in a symphony of waves and curls, each one a masterpiece of nature's..." Do you know why? Because it's from a fucking wig shop. That's right. So when people do shit like that, I question the entirety of who they are. I don't believe for one fucking second that either one of those two are men. And I hate to even give credit to, well, I don't know how to say this. How do I say this? I don't want to give any credit to people of Megxit that are pretending to be Sussex Squad or whatever you want to say. Because what it is it's Megxit YouTubers trying to take down other Megxit YouTubers. Trust me when I tell you, that is all that it is. So anyway, you have these Megxits that pretend to be Sussex Squad. And with the sole intention is just to take down other Megxit YouTubers. I just want to reiterate that. But if you go to them, and those who know, if you go to them and you look at some of their tweets, I hate to fucking agree with them. I do, okay? But there's a few that call out the fake royalist. And, you know, well, I'll never admit it to them. And frankly, on Twitter, we're mutually blocked. And I'm pretty sure they don't listen to my podcast. You know, credit where credit's due. Because they ain't wrong. Y'all can do what you want with that information. You can crumple it up and throw it in the trash. Just try not to be two-faced about it, okay? Because, well, we know who you are, too. I think that might be it, guys. I think we covered everything. You've got the basics to become a world-class insulter. And if there is anything that this podcast can give you, it's this. And I'm going to paraphrase Alan Watts here. "I don't have advice. Stop aspiring and start writing. And writing doesn't have to be writing. Writing can be creating, or writing can be just being. If you're writing, you're a writer. Write like you're a goddamn death row inmate and the governor is out of the country and there's no chance for a pardon. Write like you're clinging to the edge of a cliff, white knuckles, on your last breath, and you've got just one last thing to say, like you're a bird flying over us, and you can see everything. And please, for God's sakes, tell us something that will save us from ourselves. Take a deep breath and tell us your deepest, darkest secret, so we can wipe our brow and know that we're not alone. Write like you have a message from the king. Or don't. Who knows? Maybe you're one of the lucky ones who doesn't have to. And that's what I want you to know. You're not alone out here. We're all together in the Chatting Tonight Clubhouse, where you know, if you haven't got anything nice to say, come sit by me.